Hi everyone, my name is Zoe Russell and I'm the Assistant Executive Director for Republicans Against Marijuana Prohibition, which is RAMP. I am here today with Sheriff Joe DeSalvo of Pitkin County, Colorado. He's been in law enforcement in Pitkin County since 1981, but he originally hails from Brooklyn, New York, and he was elected Pitkin County Sheriff in 2010. So I asked him to speak with us today, to speak to RAMP and address some of the pretty obvious questions that somebody like myself coming from Texas or another state where marijuana is completely illegal would have for a sheriff or a law enforcement officer who's going through these, revolutionary changes of a legal market where Colorado is literally the freest place in the world in terms of marijuana. So I'll just start off. You've been there for a while. Texas doesn't have a medical market, and that's one of the things that a lot of states work on first is medical access because those patients are, some of the most innocent victims of this whole thing. So we're looking to try and get a medical marijuana program in Texas, and I'm curious, what were the changes when that first came about? I think it was in 2000 in Colorado for your state.
Well, first of all, thanks for interviewing me. I'm happy to do it. I support your cause, and I think you guys are on the right track. What we started when we got Amendment 20 voted in 2000, we voted for medical marijuana. We're also in a state where I think marijuana use was pretty low on our priorities as far as law enforcement in a lot of communities, not just me. So when we had this medical marijuana come in, it wasn't really anything all that new to us. The only thing that was new to us is that you could go to a place and buy it. That was our, I think, precursor to legalization. I think we had a good test program. When we had medical in, after a year or two or three of having it, we realized it was not tearing our society apart. It wasn't making things worse. We certainly knew there were people that were taking advantage of the situation who didn't have necessarily the ailments or the degree of ailments needed to get the medical marijuana, but they got it anyway. So I think that was a precursor to legalization. Once we were legalized, I have to tell you, since January this year, there's been virtually no impact when it comes to law enforcement in at least Pitkin County. We had one break into one dispensary. The bad guys got nothing because of the security systems and the safes and the things that were put in place by the state of Colorado. So as far as crime and its effect on my department or any other police department in our county and adjoining counties, I could say it really hasn't been a big impact.
Right. So, I mean, marijuana was originally made illegal because it was linked to crime and linked to this crazy behavior. And certainly you hear anecdotal stories of people who go way overboard. Have you had experiences where people are overdosing? Like, what is your thought? I know the hottest topic for people right now seems to be edibles that appear to be attractive to children. Have you had experience with people as adults overdosing on edibles? And then have you had experiences or heard of experiences where children are accessing edibles? And what changes has the state made to kind of correct those things?
Well, the state came second. We kind of got out ahead of this in my community. One of the programs I promote is responsibility. Responsibility at point of sale, responsibility for the user, and most importantly, responsibility for parents. If your kid's getting a hold of this, there's a good chance it's coming from your stash. So I think parents have to be incredibly responsible and not use at home, not use in front of their children. Never give a kid the idea that, look, I could use this and function normally. I think those are all very, very bad ideas. As far as edible goes, yes, we've had some edible, if you will, call it overdosing. It won't kill you. It's really uncomfortable. Our hospital has seen, a slight increase. But the word's getting out that when you react this way, wait it out, it'll pass. It may take, depending on the dosage, it could take 12 to 24 hours. So now what we're doing, and the state is kind of following suit, we actually did it first, though. What we did was we saw this problem coming with medical. People were eating edible products and really, really, really getting on some bad trips. So when it became, that was, as I said, that's a good test market, was the medical part of it. So we immediately found out that we have to do something about edibles. And that was even before January 1st, 2014, when we got recreational. We realized that this was an unpredictable product. It was a time release, if you will, product that hit you between the eyes 45 minutes to an hour later. We realized that there were just some products we didn't want in our communities. Some of them, as I call them, are look-alike products, candies that look like Reese's peanut butter cups or a Snickers bar or anything like that. We decided was not right for our community. And we worked with our, we didn't come out with a regulation against it. We didn't do what government does. We didn't pound our fist and say, you can't do this. What we did was we went to our dispensary owners and said, look, this just doesn't make sense. We're all trying to do this, to go in the right direction. Let's not do anything that could harm our big picture cause. So the dispensary owner said, you know what, you're right. We're pulling all those look-alike products. We're only gonna, and like I said, you got to remember, this was before January. So we pulled all the look-alike products, and we made everything here, you know, whether it has a green cross on it or in a childproof container, all that stuff happened long before the state of Colorado, which in the last month said, you know, you got to limit this to 5 milligram doses. And I couldn't agree more with that. As a first-time user, 5 milligrams is probably a good dose. As a first-time user, 50 milligrams is really going to make you sick. And so when somebody goes into a dispensary here in Pitkin County, they get an educational program from the dispensary owner. The first question asked is, when was the last time you used marijuana and what was the delivery system? If somebody says, I've never used it, and they have, you know, 10 edibles in their hand, the dispensary owner is going to say, look, put all those back. Come back with 5 milligrams of something, and that's going to be your first dose. If somebody buys flour, they're told, look, take 2 puffs of this and wait around a little while. So our dispensary owners have taken an incredible responsibility in this, but through education and responsible sales. Like I said, responsibility is our mantra, if you will, around here.
Right. Yeah, and it's interesting, like, thinking about how these are professional business owners that want to see their investments be successful. And it's just so different than even what we deal with on the black market, where you're not pinpointing down who the true business owners in this market are. It's criminals. So you're obviously very close with the dispensaries in your community. I know that there aren't a huge number. Denver obviously has the most amount of dispensaries in their limits. I hear from legislators in Texas. Well, I know what my colleagues have told me in Colorado is that cartels are infiltrating the market, the marijuana, recreational and medical marijuana market has, you know, drug cartels involved in it. And I just don't see how a drug cartel would choose the highly regulated business of marijuana sales to jump into over, you know, any number of other legal businesses that they could jump into. Does that just seem really outlandish to you, or do you feel like that could be a possibility in other areas of Colorado?
Frankly, I think it sounds a little outlandish that a Mexican cartel would be importing marijuana to try and compete with a retail marijuana. I think that would be a losing proposition for any cartel. I mean, what I think we're going to see over the next few years, and of course it's not immediate because this is still kind of a novelty, if you will, around here. But I think once these large, significant grows come into Colorado, like, you know, we have one 27,000 square foot grow operation that's going to probably be completed in the next 6 months or so. And if a bunch of those pop up in Colorado, which they already do, after the novelty wears off, I think the price will come down. I don't think there's a cartel that could compete with it. I mean, it's just like saying I have a black market cigarette business. Well, there's no way my black, I mean, as far as making cigarettes, there's no way my black market cigarette business can compete with R.J. Reynolds. No way.
Right.
And same way, if I made beer in my basement or wine in my basement or a still in my basement, there's no way I can compete with Anheuser-Busch and Jack Daniels and whatever else. So I think that's where it's going. And that's what we've been saying for years. Legalize it and push the cartel out. I definitely see that is the future. Especially the more states legalize this. But I do find it impossible to believe that the cartels are infiltrating our legal marijuana business. Seed to sale is documented in this state times 10. So it would be really hard for cartel weed to get into a legal dispensary.
Can you touch on that a little bit, like the seed-to-sale system that they're required to comply with? Or do you have access to the database and whatnot so that you can track it? Is that your responsibility, or is that a different agency?
No. Well, it's a little of both. Originally, when we just had medical, we had a medical marijuana compliance division, a state-operated agency that checked dispensary records, checked their seed to sale, how they were getting it, all that stuff. Now that we're fully legal, there is still the regulatory component of it, but they are working on, as we said, tracking is what they're doing most. I often say that when we voted on this in Colorado, Amendment 64 was, do we want to legalize marijuana and regulate it the same way we regulate alcohol? Well, in my opinion, we are regulating marijuana significantly more, at least now, than we are alcohol in this state. If you buy a bottle of Jack, you know, if I went to a teenage party or one of my officers broke up a teenage party and saw a bottle of Jack Daniels there, we'd have no way to know where that Jack Daniels came from.
Mm.
If we broke up a juvenile party right now and we found some canisters that were from dispensaries, we could tell where that came from, when they bought it, where it was created. If it was a medical marijuana sale, we could see who it was sold to and then go back to that person and say, hey, somehow
wow,
your marijuana turned up at a juvenile party.
Right.
So now granted, if we just have the seed or the flower, we can't do anything
right
with that. That's like finding a half full
bottle of beer. They also package it in those bags. Do those bags have the same type of labeling where you'd be able to
exactly
sell?
All that,
yeah.
You know, I've often joked, you know, I-70 goes right through Colorado. And there's a lot of nuclear waste and plutonium and whatever up and down that highway. You know, I've also often joked that I think marijuana is regulated more closely than nuclear waste is in our
mm-hmm.
state. I mean, if you have that canister, you can tell where it came from, where it was grown, what dispensary sold it, you know, and maybe even at what time. So it's really an amazing tracking system that we have here.
Great. I'll ask one other question. I actually was in Aspen recently where I'd met you at the Normal Legal Seminar. And while we were there, we went to a reggae show at just a local club. And there was not one single bit of smoke that I saw in that room at a reggae show, which was kind of funny to me because I thought it was the ultimate test. If you were in Houston, Texas, I can tell you people would definitely, you would definitely see smoke in the air. But I didn't see any there, and I wondered from your perspective, do you have issues with public use? I know that Aspen's a tourist attraction town, so I imagine that that would be a concern of business owners, is to have like a sort of, you know, less than attractive appearance of people just smoking out on the streets and whatnot.
Well, I, Zoe, I'm glad you were here. And when we met each other, we both had the same experience, that we found people that were visiting here from other states who felt liberated when they could smoke in the private area of their outdoor hotel, which is permitted, by the way, if you have a private party. However, I also saw a lot of people who were very suspicious of it as well. You know, they couldn't believe it was true, that not only could they come to a state and buy marijuana, but they could take it back to a private area in their hotel on, you know, whether it's a deck or whatever, and smoke their marijuana. So to answer your question, though, I have not had one, and I could speak for all our law enforcement agencies here, we have not had one single arrest for public use. I do. You're right. I don't see a cloud of smoke hovering over our community. We do have a lot of special events here, global special events, whether it is a concert you described that, or a symposium for global initiatives. Haven't seen any of what you're talking about. I think people are incredibly respectful of it, especially Coloradans. We don't want to give this a bad name. We don't want it to fail. I think a lot of people in Colorado feel that we are being watched very closely. And so far, I could say, even when I go to Denver, and I was in Denver this weekend, I don't see it. I don't see public use. And as I said, this state is not deteriorating because of marijuana. It's actually thriving. Our state is a very, very, very popular, successful state. You know, the fear people have of adults walking down the street and kids getting hit with secondhand smoke is not the experience I'm having here. I'm just not.
Right.
We were one of the first cities in the United States to ban smoking in bars. I didn't see a lot of people moving out of their bars and smoking in the streets. You know, we have a 15-foot smoking rule. You can't smoke within 15 feet of the establishment's front door. People were very respectful of that. I think people feel the same way about marijuana. They want to be respectful about it. Now, I know our community is small, and I don't expect the same answer from the chief of police in New York City or Dallas or Houston or anything else. I have a very unique community with really unique constituents who want to be respectful and don't want to be known as a community that's a bunch of potheads.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. Well, that I agree with that. It is a different community, but I want to touch on the kind of people that are in the lobbies buying this either medical or recreational, well, mainly recreational marijuana. What are the kind of people? It's your everyday kind of person that you see buying it. Is that correct in your experience?
Yeah, I don't spend a lot of time at the dispensaries watching who's going through the cash register, but I do ask the dispensary owners what they're seeing. It's everything from the 21-year-old to the actually our first marijuana sale and retail sale was to a 73-year-old person. I think I understood, and I could be wrong, that I think the first retail marijuana sale in Washington State might have been to a city manager or somebody like that for the city of Seattle. We're seeing all kinds of people going in. As far as our visitors go, 4th of July was one of our biggest holidays here. Brings a lot of people into town. It was probably the biggest holiday we've had since recreational marijuana in January 1st. And, I mean, we didn't sell our first legal retail until March. All the dispensaries decided they were going to go into this slowly and not open January 1st. So we've had that test period, if you will, and I'm just seeing, as I was saying, the 4th of July weekend comes along, and I asked the dispensary owners, who were we seeing buying? What kind of visitors and what were they doing? The answer I got was, we saw a spike. We keep track of first-time users and lifelong users, and they had a lot of first-time users come through the door and buy very responsibly, and that's how it went. So I do think people are coming here, not for it, but I
right.
think it's also a component of coming here now. I don't know if this is going to affect us in the future, but I don't know if people will consider if I'm going to go to Snowbird, Utah to ski or Aspen, Colorado to ski. Let's go to Aspen because it's got the same snow, but they also got weed there. I don't know if that's really a consideration in people's choice of destination or not.
Right. Yeah, I'm not a skier, so I couldn't tell you at all
mm-hmm.
from that aspect.
Right.
But I before I let you go, I'll let you go here in a couple minutes, but I definitely want to discuss driving under the influence and basically, like, if you could give us the overall feeling that you get from Colorado law enforcement about recreational marijuana, if you're, you know, plugged into it, whether, you know, what maybe some people who disagree say, who are in the state, are there people who are major figures in the state who still disagree with it, who are kind of fighting it and have serious issues with it and publicize those issues? Or is it a feeling that y'all are, you know, looking forward to the regulation and to making this into a legal market rather than this black market where you have much more control over it as law enforcement? So those two questions, the driving under the influence first, I suppose.
Well, as far as driving goes, I think time will tell. Right now, my agency's had one arrest for driving under the influence of marijuana. We still, by far, have hundreds of arrests for driving under the influence a year of alcohol. So far, alcohol is still winning a very unfortunate race. It's still outweighing by far driving under the influence of marijuana. I do have trained drug recognition experts that are looking for stone drivers. Now, in my opinion only, it's a lot harder to detect a stone driver than it is a drunk driver. So that might be something that my industry has to look at changing. How are
right.
we going to better detect stone drivers? How are we going to develop a roadside test that could instantly tell us, like we have portable testers for alcohol? Are we going to develop a test that instantly tells us what level of intoxication this stone driver is under? What is going to be a legal limit? What is too much? All of those questions still have to be answered. But
right.
And I know my detractors will say, well, while you're trying to figure this out, we got stone drivers out there. As I said earlier, at this point, it has not made the impact that alcohol has made in our community. It's something I'm very concerned about. That I'm going to tell you, two biggest priorities I have about this is stone driving and children. And both are a responsibility issue. Whether it's alcohol or weed or pain pills or whatever, you should not be behind the wheel when you're under the influence. But, when I get detractors telling me, what about our kids? What about our kids? That is a parental issue, period. Don't rely on government to raise your children. We'll fail. I mean, we can't balance a budget.
Right.
So
right.
I'll just say
really quickly, this quote from Kevin Sabat of SAM, which is Smart Approaches to Marijuana, and they are against recreation. He's quoted in the New York Times, we've seen marijuana slipping through Colorado's borders. We've seen marijuana getting into the hands of kids. That's what he says about the legalization. But getting
mm-hmm.
into the hands of children, and I agree with you, it's totally a parental issue. Under prohibition or not, you really need to be on top of your kids because they under prohibition have access. So if you think that it's stopping them from having access to drugs, it's not. You need to have that responsibility for your child right now, no matter what the status is in your state.
Exactly, Zoe. And before legalization, as you said earlier, I've been at this a long time. Pre-legalization, we would see kids with pot and we'd say, where'd you get this? Or they'd say, I found it in my dad's sock drawer. Well, you know what, parents? Don't store your marijuana at home. I would not, as I said, I'm against using it in your house when you have your children there. This is all stuff that a responsible parent has to do. When people come to me and say, my kid had marijuana, what are you going to do about it? The only thing I could offer them is the tracking part of it. How they got it is up to you as a parent. You need to be responsible. You need to keep an eye on your kids. You need to know who they're hanging around with. You need to be active in their lives and don't let them, the most successful parents I've seen by far are parents that are involved in their kids' lives every day until they leave the house. And you could tell the kids that have no supervision that are getting their hands on this and using it. And it's a parental issue. Don't rely, like I said, and it's repetitive, don't rely on government for this. We'll fail. We will let you down on this. So when I get hit with what about kids, we didn't vote on marijuana for kids. We voted on marijuana for adults. And this is strictly an issue for parents to keep it out of their kids' hands. I mean, we're doing the best we can at the dispensary level. If you see a canister in your kid's room and it's got the tag on it, I would bring it to me. I would take it back to the dispensary. We could see who bought it. We could see who gave it to your kid. And now we're on to something. But that is a responsibility issue.
Right. Really good point there.
Yeah.
So we can close on just the feeling that you get from law enforcement across Colorado. And then I guess if you're hearing anything from states that are neighboring states to Colorado too.
I do. When you were here for the conference, I talked to a lot of states, just like you're doing now. I believe your group is doing the right thing in getting responsible, accurate information out there. As you said when we started the interview, the reefer madness thing, I think still exists in some places. I think that's an archaic way to look at this now with the information we have. And as far as other law enforcement officers go, the week or two after you were here in June, I hosted 50 sheriffs out of 64 here for our annual conference. I did a marijuana segment with a local marijuana group that I started. And, the message is, hey, guys, I know some of you are against this, but our state voted on it. It's now a constitutional amendment in this state. Let's work on a responsibility program instead of just dissing the whole fact that we now have this.
Mm-hmm.
Let's work on responsibility. And so, one of the things I've done, and I really wanted to make a point of this today, and thanks for giving me the opportunity, is what we did here is we developed a local Valley Marijuana Council. And what I did was I took the 10 major stakeholders in our community, the school district, the hospital, the ski company, the dispensaries, law enforcement, recovery community, all of these people we sat in a room before the first sale in January, and we said, how are we going to introduce this into our community? And we all agreed, from the health community down to law enforcement, that it's here, get used to it. Now we have to be responsible with its introduction. So what we started to do is the first thing we had was a community forum. We put all our stakeholders up there. And, when people would ask a question about kids and youth, we had a psychiatrist and a health teacher from the high school answer those questions. If somebody had a lodging question, we had somebody from the lodging community. Somebody had a question about overdosing and how many we're seeing, we had somebody from the emergency room there. So that was our first public forum. And we had individual forums at the school, several at the schools, teaching parents what to look for. We've had a couple on driving. We've had a couple on when you're visiting Aspen, what to expect when it comes to marijuana. So I think we are bombarding our community with accurate information and a message of responsible use and sale.
I love it. That's great. It's
hiding
such
your head in the
open and responsible way to deal with it. Amazing.
Yeah, and you know, like I said, my community voted on this by 75%. So we're not a head in the sand community, but I think head in the sand is a recipe for some dangerous behavior in your community with kids and adults and everyone else.
I agree. And I really want to thank you so much for your time. I will let you go with that. Thanks so much, Sheriff Joe DeSalvo of Pitkin County in Colorado, with the major city being Aspen, Colorado. Thanks so much for joining RAMP today, and we wish you the best, and maybe we can have an update at the end of the year and see what's going on at that point.
I would love to do that, Zoe, and thanks for giving me the platform to get my message out there.